Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 2 years ago, when that great house of financial cards called Enron came tumbling down, the crash affected everyone. Enron's demise helped derail an already struggling economy. It ended our belief that if something had been audited, it was accurate. And it made the name Ken Lay a household synonym for executive greed. Now Enron is back in the news with a federal judge's ruling that company employees can go after Ken Lay and the companies responsible for managing those retirement plans. Once again, back to what happened 2 years ago. If you remember, at the very time when Enron stock was starting to fall, the company's senior executives were selling what they had and making millions. But the workers, who'd been told to invest their retirement savings in the company stock, discovered that they couldn't touch their accounts. They were forced to watch while their life savings just melted away. But while this new ruling may be good news for Enron employees in the short run, it may hurt the rest of us in the long run if it makes companies more wary of setting up any sort of retirement plan for workers. So, Connection listeners, who's responsible when your retirement plan goes belly up? Should workers be able to go after Ken Lay and the companies for those losses? Do you still trust the company plan, or have you decided that the only one who'll look after you is you? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us today is Lynn Sarko. He's lead plaintiff's attorney in the Enron case, and he's joining us from the NPR affiliate KUOW in Seattle, Washington. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
I wonder if you can start by stripping away as much of the legal language as possible, and in simple terms, just tell us what the ruling means.
In simple terms, the ruling says that the retirees who had their money invested in the Enron retirement accounts, specifically in Enron stock, have a right to pursue those claims against Enron, Ken Lay, the other executives who were responsible for the plan, but most importantly, Northern Trust Company, which was a professional trustee, which we allege was asleep at the switch.
And the ruling, just to be clear, so I don't make mistakes with this, the ruling has cleared the way for people to sue these people. It doesn't weigh the scales in any way about how fortunate they'll be in those suits.
That's correct. At the beginning of a lawsuit in federal court, the defendants are allowed to file something called a motion to dismiss. Basically, it says that if the plaintiffs can prove what we allege, that then those claims are proper in law and we will recover.
I remember, almost 2 years ago now, reporting on the difficulties that people were having then and how much money had been lost, Lynn. Is there money there to be got? I mean, are we talking about forcing Ken Lay to sell his Colorado homes, or are we talking about a more substantive amount of money that these retirees might, in fact, be able to get their hands on?
Well, that's a very good question. The court ruling allowed us to proceed, one, against Enron Corporation, which is in bankruptcy court, and we have a claim against that, so we will be fighting with the other creditors of Enron for money. It allows us to proceed against Ken Lay and some of the other executives to try to get at the monies that they have, which we are still trying to find out about. It allows us to proceed and try to recover money, in essence, from the insurance companies. Enron did have insurance for this. But most importantly, it allows us to proceed against Northern Trust Company, which is a multi-billion-dollar company whose business is to administer retirement plans, headquartered in Chicago. And the court said basically that even though Northern Trust claimed they had no responsibility, they were merely following orders, that that's not true, that they did have some responsibility if we prove our case.
Lynn, I want you to stay with me if you can for a minute, because I think it would be useful to go back to mid-January 2002. What's that, some 20 months ago? We talked at that time with Linda Roberts, who had been director of producer services at Enron, working right underneath a vice president, about what was happening at that moment when the company was really coming tumbling down.
I saw all of these employees who'd been there for years and years, you know, ushered out the door with 2-hour notice in one day, and we didn't even have the opportunity to say goodbye. I went over in the original Enron building just so I could say goodbye to people. And what I want, these people left without any money, no paychecks coming in, weren't even sure they were going to have medical coverage. What I want for them and what I want out of the executives, if there were a way that would be possible, I would love to see their assets frozen, that money that converted to a dollar value, and these people receive some of their 401k values back.
Getting some of those 401k values back. Linda Roberts joining us now on the phone live from Austin, Texas. Linda, welcome back to The Connection.
Good morning. And my story hasn't changed. I'm one of the fortunate ones, but because the Enron collapse is going to be the impetus for change in the way pension plans are governed and way they're managed in the future, and because of the accountability now that corporate officers will be responsible for, I want the Enron employees of all people are entitled to some type of benefit for implementing this change. And what I would like to see, there's a couple things going on here. First of all, yes, and I'm so glad that we've got the right now to go after the Enron assets or what may be left in Kinlay. But here's the thing, even though, and the attorney could probably tell us this, most likely we're going to stand in line right equal with the creditors. And I will take the position that the employee 401k retirement benefits should be first in line. The creditors can write their losses off. If you are an outside investor in Enron stock, you get to write that off against your tax liability. We don't. As our 401k stock has no, there's no tax advantage to writing it off against future income. So if there was any way that we thought we could get in front of the creditors, then the 401k plan should receive the most protection. I think because we were innocent as to why the collapse occurred and that our stock was being used as collateral to support these off-balance sheet transactions, we didn't know any of that. We didn't know how vulnerable we were. And so consequently, if anyone should receive any additional protection, it ought to be the employees under the 401k plan.
Well, Lynn Sarko, does the ruling this week move the claims of the employees any further up?
It does, but I think Linda has a good point, and it's even worse than she thinks. Right now, Enron and some of the other companies who have actually filed for bankruptcy, some of the lawyers for those bankrupt companies and some of the creditors are even arguing that the employees, their retirement claims, should go behind the creditors. In other words, that all of the creditors should be able to collect in the bankruptcy.
Well, there'd be nothing left, right?
And there would be nothing left, which
absolutely,
I think is wrong, is an outrage. And I think one of the things that comes out of this that we will not only be fighting before Judge Harmon, but we will be going to New York before Judge Gonzalez in the bankruptcy court and really saying these workers have at least an equal right to the other creditors, if not a better right.
And I think it's probably important that we remind ourselves that the difficulties that people are facing as a result of having invested their careers and their savings in Enron continues to affect employees in many cases right across the country. I'd like to bring Tom Padgett into the conversation here. Tom is some 60 years old with 30 years put in with Enron. And Tom, you actually managed to hang on to your job when a lot of other people were laid off. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. They had sold our plant to one of their subsidiaries or spinoff companies called EOT Energy. And so actually I've been working since Enron went belly up, and it was so unfortunate that so many others got laid off, but I was thankful that I still had a job even though I didn't have any retirement.
Tell me what happened yesterday.
Well, actually, I went into work yesterday and got my notice that my October 17th would be my last day. I just got laid off yesterday.
And did they say anything to you about what your benefits or your severance would be?
Yes, sir. They did give us a severance package, which will hold me over for about 6 months. But after that, that's it.
Tell me, Tom, how much money you estimate you lost by having your retirement fund invested with Enron?
Figure about $675,000.
And was that it? Was that the money that you were going to grow old with?
Yes, sir, absolutely. My wife and I right now are probably looking at having to work at some kind of job until the day we die.
Now, you're a part of this class action that Lynn Sarko is heading up here. What kind of hopes do you have, Tom, that you're going to, in the next year or two, when you're going to start needing that money, what kind of hopes do you have that you'll actually get something back?
Well, actually, we're hoping that, you know, that we will get something back. Naturally, we understand that we won't get all of our money back, more than likely, but you know, if we can just get part of it back, that would help a great deal and bring some of these people to justice that have misappropriated or misled the employees that were so faithful and hardworking to make that company what it was.
And who do you think owes you that money? Is it the trust company? Is it Ken Lay? Is it Enron? Who do you point the finger at here?
I think all three of them. I think all three of them were just as guilty as the other. Naturally, I hold Ken Lay and the company management somewhat more responsible because they knew what was going on. They knew the condition of the company. But I think all three of them are responsible.
Now, Linda Roberts, are you working again?
I am. I'm the director of the State Energy Marketing Program for the state of Texas. So I'm one of the lucky ones. But like Tom was mentioning, when I was at Enron, the last 2 years I was there, I was planning on retiring in two more years. I'm 57 years old now, and I plan to work at least 10 to maybe 15 years. I have a wonderful job, and I'm one of the fortunate ones. I had to relocate. I moved to out of Houston, moved to Austin, Texas, and have a wonderful job here. So I've been very blessed. Many of the former employees were not so fortunate.
Are you confident that this can be, that some of this can be fixed in the courts, or do you think it also has to go political as well?
It's going to take political influence to really get to place the pressure and for the employees to have any preferential rights over the creditors. There'll have to be some political influence imposed, or it'll never happen.
Linda, I want to thank you for joining us once again on The Connection. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you.
That's Linda Roberts from Austin, Texas. And Tom Padgett, I wish you the very best and appreciate your taking the time to join us today.
Thank you very much, sir.
That's Tom Padgett joining us on the phone from his home in Mont Bellevue, Texas, just outside Houston. And Connection listeners, here's the plan. When we come back after the break, Lynn Sarko, who is lead plaintiff attorney in this case against Enron, is staying with us to help us understand just exactly what the implications of the ruling will be, not only for Enron employees, but for all the rest of us. And we're going to bring Jim Klein into the conversation. Jim's president of the American Benefits Council, and he's been looking at this ruling from a completely different perspective. He's one of these people who's looking at it and thinking that maybe it's going to make executives, companies very antsy about even opening up retirement plans and making the sorts of joint contributions that some of us have taken for granted, whether it's 401ks or whatever other kind of system. So we'll take a look at the two sides when we come back. We'd like to have you in on the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And a federal court ruling in Texas this week may have implications for the way that all of us have our retirement benefits either handled or not handled by the company. With me on the program today, Lynn Sarko, who is the lead plaintiff attorney in the case against Enron. He's joining us from a studio in Seattle, Washington. And Jim Klein's joining us now. He's president of the American Benefits Council. Jim Klein, do you see this as a profound ruling?
Well, yes, it certainly has enormous implications. And first, let me restate the obvious, that what happened to the Enron employees and retirees is absolutely heartbreaking, and absolutely participants in a plan should have an ability and have recourse to go after those responsible here. But it seems to me that the problem is not at all in our pension laws. The issue simply lies in vigorously enforcing the laws that are on the books in all 50 states that fraud is illegal. If you have individuals, executives or others, who misrepresent the facts to their employees, to their shareholders, to the investors, etc., that is illegal if those allegations are proven to be true. And people will be held accountable for that, both in terms of fines as well as going to prison. But to say that somehow these other parties are to be held accountable, I find astounding. Specifically, Mr. Sarko's repeated mention of what was significant about this decision, that Northern Trust is now to be held accountable. Northern Trust was fulfilling its role as a ministerial trustee. And what is amazing to me is that the judge, dismissed these charges or granted the motion to dismiss charges against people like Mr. Fastow and Mr. Skilling and some of the outside directors, but somehow held Northern Trust accountable. Now, we have to look at this in a much broader perspective. We don't want people, even some other executives who don't have specific responsibilities relating to the plan, to necessarily be held accountable. But this is all about deep pockets. You asked an excellent question of Mr. Sarko. You know, does Ken Lay have to now relinquish his Colorado home? Well, that isn't going to be enough to satisy the legitimate claims of people who lost
money. So broaden it out for us, though, Jim. What's the big implication here that you want to draw our attention to?
The big implication is that if you're going to now broaden who's to be held accountable, there are going to be individuals and institutions that are not going to be willing to take on those responsibilities because of the liability. Or if they do take on those responsibilities, they are going to charge the companies and the individual participants a great deal more for those services, for that legal risk that they're bearing. And that's not good for the rest of us.
All right. I haven't, I should say up front, read the 329 pages of the judge's ruling. But Lynn Sarko, why did the judge single out the trust company and let, for example, all the Citigroup and the other banks off the hook? Why is she saying that the trust company does bear the responsibility here?
For a very good reason. She agreed with the Department of Labor and us, who pointed out that Northern Trust Company was the trustee. The other investment banks were pursued on a different theory, but they were not the trustee. They did not have a contractual obligation to monitor and protect those assets. And interestingly enough, let's go through what they did wrong. The trust agreement and the plan documents require that this plan be one diversified. Over 60%
Who said it should be diversified? It wasn't the executives at Enron saying it should be diversified. They wanted everybody buying Enron stock.
The plan documents that set up the plan.
Okay.
The agreement that sets up this plan requires that the plan be diversified. Over 60% of the $2.1 billion in the 401k assets of the plan were in Enron stock. Northern Trust Company, who was the trustee, has to administer the plan, and pursuant to those documents. Second point, it is interesting that when all of these executives were questioned in Congress, and what we've discovered to date was they never, ever met to decide whether it was still prudent to invest this money in Enron stock. The reason Northern Trust should be liable is they took on the job. They were paid lots of money to be trustee, and if they didn't want to do the job properly, then they shouldn't have taken it.
All right, back to Jim Klein. If the job of the trustee is to be paid to monitor and protect and look out for the diversification of the funds, why shouldn't that firm be held responsible?
Well, I think a really good question is, is 60% of the plan in company stock, does that, at what point is it not diversified? Interestingly enough, when the stock is doing really well, undoubtedly a higher percentage of the overall value of the plan is going to be in company stock. When the stock tanks, a lesser percentage will be. So, at what point are you going to start holding a financial institution whose job it is to take the direction from the company and from the individual participants to say, this is now not diversified.
I know we have the benefit of hindsight, Jim, here, but
right.
But would you say that your own portfolio, with 60% of the money all invested in one company, is well diversified?
Well, that's an excellent question, and the answer to that question, I think, is not as obvious as we all might think. Of course, we should be diversified. That is a cardinal rule of retirement planning. Mm-hmm. But we can't say that one individual who has 80% of their 401k in their own company stock is necessarily less well diversified than a fellow employee who has only 10%, because that 80% invested person might have all sorts of other assets guaranteeing their retirement security. They may also be a participant mm-hmm. in a company's more traditional defined benefit pension plan that's guaranteed by the company, whereas the person with only 10% may only have that 401k plan. So you can't really make a hard and fast rule about, you know,
I realize it's a subjective thing to talk about diversification.
Yeah.
Just trying to understand it. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's hear from some of our listeners around the country. First, Springfield, Massachusetts. Alex is joining us. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
So who's responsible? The company, the trust company, you. What do you make of this?
I think the employees are entirely responsible. I think we're setting a dangerous precedent here by holding the employer responsible. Basically, we're talking about a 401k defined contribution plan. It's completely voluntary, and it's only the employees that make the selection of where to invest their money. We're not talking about a defined benefit pension plan.
You know a little bit about this.
I am a CPA, so I do understand some.
So when a company says to me, I really, really want you to invest in company stock, and if you do, I'll give you these extra little goodies and bonuses, doesn't that tip the balance a little bit away from just the employee's responsibility?
Well, I don't think you can hold the employer responsible for that. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the term diversification was tossed out. And when you
right.
look at the 401k plan of Enron, there were several other options besides employer stock. And so the statistic was tossed out about 60% being invested in stock, and that's not really diversified. But that's not necessarily meaning that everybody had 60% of their 401k plan in Enron stock. So, if I have a diversified portfolio outside of my 401k plan, I should be entitled to have 100% of my 401k in employer stock if I want.
You started out by saying that it's dangerous for the employers to be held responsible here. Why? What do you see the implications of this ruling being?
Well, because ultimately the decision comes down to a decision made by the employee. The employer did not make the decision. The employee had free will to choose where to invest
their
money.
Don't take me back into the details of the case. Look ahead for me and tell me why you think this is problematic.
Well, I think if there are several public companies across the country that offer employer stock in their 401k plans, and if this starts happening, if we set a precedent of employees suing their employers, then this could have a ripple effect affecting several companies. And
you think the CEOs will just say, hey, to heck with it. We're not going to run a retirement plan. It's too risky.
Exactly. And I think ultimately the employees will suffer because a lot of employers offer employee match, which is made in the form of employer stock. And if employers feel that this is too risky for them, then potentially they could even not offer matching because they're not required to offer matching. Oh. So I think ultimately the participants are the ones that suffer.
Okay, Alex, thanks for your call. I want
to
go to Lynn Sarko here just on the first point that Alex made, that it really ultimately has to be the responsibility of the employees to decide how the money is invested in their retirement plan.
Well, my response is hogwash, and here are a few reasons. Many of these employees are janitors, regular workers, line workers. They don't have a degree in finance. The Department of Labor and the case law suggests that, one, that all of the options in a 401k plan, that the administrator is responsible to make sure each of those options is a prudent investment. So if you give someone a choice of five, one of them cannot be Kabul Real Estate or your brother-in-law's company. They can choose amongst prudent investments. Secondly, this match that we're talking about, you know, some companies will match it and they give it to you in cash. Some companies match it and will give you company stock, but they allow you to sell it. It seems to me that quite extreme to sit there and to give someone stock as part of their compensation and force them to keep it in the company until they retire. And it's part of this problem.
But if we take someone like Linda Roberts, who clearly, you know, has a good grip on the way these things are supposed to work and made some very conscious decisions. Linda's not on the line with us, so I don't want to call her judgment into question, but use her as an example of someone. Here's someone who knew what they were doing, Lynn, and chose to make that investment. And in her case, you're saying she also bears no responsibility for that choice.
Well, I quibble with whether she knew. Let's face what the requirements are and what happened. The company and the fiduciaries, those trustees, had a requirement to provide accurate information and full information. We had a situation where Cindy Olson, who was one of those entrusted to responsible for the plan, who was dumping her own stock. She received information that the accounting at Enron was funny. Did she do anything? No. Did she call a meeting of the committee? No. All of these people, when you are responsible for $2.1 billion of investments, you can be sure that if this was State Street, Boston, or Bank of New York, and I gave them $2.1 million of my money to invest, they're not going to sit there and put it all in a company and ask no questions.
Jim Klein, let me hear from you.
I'd like to actually agree with elements of what both Mr. Sarko said and what the caller said. While ultimately, of course, it is individuals' responsibility to make determinations about their investments, I do think that if the individuals are being misled, are being given false information that leads them to believe that the particular investment, in this case, say, company stock, is worth more than it really is, that there should be an accountability on the part of those who engaged in that kind of deception. But I also think that the caller made a valid point that, you can go too far here in the sense that for every Enron and WorldCom, you know, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of Microsofts and Pfizers. And if we sort of go down the road that Mr. Sarko is talking about, we will actually preclude people, many of whom are modest income individuals who have accumulated great wealth by being able to share in the success of the companies for whom they work, companies that are very responsible companies. And, you know, there are a lot of, and I do want to make sort of just pause and make this point that, I mean, there are a lot of people within Enron, in fact, the vast majority of them, who were victims of this. I mean, even at the mid executive level. And so I think there's a danger sometimes in sort of sweeping broadly. But I appreciate that what you're saying is let's look forward on this. And I think that these questions about diversification or curtailing people's ability to invest in company stock could really go the other direction and really harm what for the vast majority of Americans who participate here has been an opportunity to ensure their retirement security.
Let's take another call from this one from Burlington, Massachusetts. And John's joining us. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
The question I have is more in the detail of the way this plan was operated. I'd like to know what the minimum requirement was under the plan for percentage of Enron stock held. Was it simply in the company match, or was there a requirement that people invest their choice, if you will, their actual contributions into Enron stock? Because that makes a huge difference.
John, it's a good question. Let's let Lynn Sarko in on this. Were the employees there, Lynn, required to have a certain percentage of company stock in their 401k, or was it all voluntary?
It was not all voluntary. They received matching contributions that were required to be and to stay in Enron stock. Some of those contributions, therefore, were locked up. There are other contributions that they did have a choice of what to put it in. If they did choose Enron stock, one of the problems in this case was there was a lockdown period from October 17, 2001 until November 14, 2001 when they changed administrators of the plan. At that time, even though the stock was tumbling Enron and Northern Trust agreed to go forward with the lockdown. So during that period of time, the stock fell from $34 a share to $10 a share, while employees just saw their savings wiped out and couldn't get out of it. So the answer is yes and no.
John in Burlington, if I can just go back to you.
Can I ask quickly, though?
Yeah.
What percentage was the Enron match? Because that was required. Everything else was the employee's choice as to an investment. And, you know, any good money manager will tell you that if you invest in your employee, in your employer's stock, in your retirement plan, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. I'm not in the investment business, but I do have a 401k. Like everybody else, I think, out there, I took a hit. But, again, this is something where I feel for the people who got hit. I believe that the Enron managers should pay the price for whatever can be done to rectify this. But, you know, the lockdown period, as I understand it from media reports, was agreed upon months and months in advance. And, again, these things are very, very hard to change once they're arranged. This is where, you know, I'm focusing on the Northern Trust liability here, because that seems to be the meat of the issue as far as your commentators are concerned.
John, I'm going to take your question and ask my guests to respond when we come back after the break. Just a reminder to our listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. And what we're doing this hour is taking a look at the latest ruling involving Enron employees, a ruling which gives them the permission to sue the Northern Trust Company, senior executives, the company, to try and recover some of the money that they lost when their 401ks were locked in and they lost so much money. We're looking at how that's going to affect all of us and whether or not that'll create some kind of chill, and should we be concerned about what other executives and corporations will do in setting up retirement plans or adjusting the ones that are still in existence. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. This hour we're talking about our pensions, our retirement funds, and whether or not decisions, one decision in particular being made this week in a Texas courtroom involving Enron, affects the way that retirement plans will be regarded by employers and employees in the years to come. 1-800-423-8255 to join us. Jim Klein is a guest. He's president of the American Benefits Council, joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Lynn Sarko is the lead plaintiff's attorney in the case against Enron. He's joining us from the NPR affiliate KUOW in Seattle, Washington. Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. Ben's on the line. Ben, hi.
Hi. How y'all doing?
Good, thanks.
My comment is that this will have to be a broader sweep because of the responsibility that the employer has to the employee to guarantee their retirement funds. This will have to make everybody put it into more of an escrow instead of reinvesting it into the company itself.
But, Ben, let me ask you something, though. If the fund manager chooses a selection of stock to invest in on behalf of the employees, stock from anywhere for that matter, and loses money, are you saying that's really no different from the case we're talking about involving Enron?
Well, to me, it's just like here in Greensboro, Cone Mills has just been bought out. All of the employees' retirement fund was handed over with that package to pay for Cone Mills' bankruptcy filings.
So they lost that
and
money.
They've lost all of their retirement. I mean, it's millions and millions of dollars that people in Greensboro are now just out of. And I see this happening on a 30-year pattern. It happened in the 70s. It's happening now again and the cost of living has gone up 30%.
Ben, what happened to the senior executives at Cone Mills? Did they lose their money as well?
No. They walked out scot-free.
Okay, let's go to Jim Klein on this. Jim, you were saying at the beginning of the program that, you know, in the case of Enron, the employees should have some recourse. You and I don't know the fine details of the case with the mill in Greensboro, but it sounds like the employees have some rights there. How do you devise a system where the employees do have the opportunity to go back and say, you've done me wrong, without rewriting all the rules?
Well, again, I think that the laws are sufficiently on the books that fraud and deception and other things like that that have been alleged here are punishable, both with the financial penalties as well as sending people to prison. I don't think it's any lack of laws on the book. I think that what this element was about here was trying to reach into some deeper pockets by holding accountable an institution and individuals who themselves were, you know, in the dark. To imagine that another institution would have a sense of what was going on inside the company when the actual, some of the executives and directors were being misled.
But that comes back to the same point that Lynn was making earlier about whether or not the Northern Trust Company, the company that was managing the retirement fund for the Enron employees, ought not to have known what was going on if they were the trustees, if it was their job to properly manage that money, right?
No, I mean, how would we expect that company to know when shareholders, Wall Street analysts, SEC regulators, people like that, employees themselves who were inside the company had sort of the best sense, you know, one would think, one would hope, of going on. Obviously, they didn't because, you know, again, if the allegations are proven correct, there was a cadre of people who were engaging in all sorts of practices that was misleading a much broader group. To sort of hold accountable an institution whose job it is to take the direction from the person to say, you know, please put my X percent into this account and please put the other X percent into that account, somehow that Northern Trust should have known that this was inappropriate or that the stock really wasn't worth what it was, you know, market value was, I find it amazing. I also think I need to address one other point that was made right before the break about this so-called lockdown period or blackout period, because it's been such a source of public confusion and actually an interesting source of congressional scrutiny. To me, what is so pertinent about that three-week period where people were not able to trade, it was called for perfectly legitimate reasons. The company was switching from one record keeper in their 401k plan to another record keeper. So you have to prevent people from trading during that period of time if you want to avoid all sorts of errors occurring. That's okay. A common practice. But here's the issue. If the employees didn't sell their stock when it fell from 90 down to 34, and then they didn't sell again when the stock, as Mr. Sarko says, was at 10 and went all the way down to essentially worthless, that proves to me that the lockdown period had nothing to do with the losses that these people had. They held on to it even when the lockdown was lifted. Why? Presumably because they had been misled as to the real value of the stock in the company.
All right. So, but Lynn, let me, if I can, step aside from the debate over the lockdown period just for the purposes of pursuing this point of whether or not someone breaks the law or not, because here's where I'm trying to make sense of the ruling and its implications. Fair enough to say that if the senior executive is charged and found guilty of fraud, that someone can go after him, can sue him, can perhaps, you know, try and recoup whatever they can. But we're in a kind of a gray area here when we're talking about the Northern Trust Company. They have not been found guilty necessarily of breaking the law, but they're key to the ruling that you're looking at here, right?
That's right. But the point is, we say, and I think the court has said, that if they did not do their job, they will be liable. The defense that Northern Trust made in the court was, we were just following orders. We had no responsibility. That was rejected by Judge Harmon. Judge Harmon says a trustee does have a responsibility. They do have to do their job. They do have to monitor, and they do have to ask questions. we will never know what would have happened if Northern Trust would have gone in and said, the plan documents require that things be properly diversified. Have you done that? The plan requires you and the law requires you to decide whether this is a prudent investment. Is it? We will get into the case that it is will be interesting if Northern Trust had other clients that it was suggesting should not invest more money in Enron or should not be involved in the whole sector, and they were getting those
at the same time as they were giving other advice to the people at Enron.
Correct.
Let me, if I can, get to another call, to Tom, who's waiting on the line in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Well, I think half my point was made, which was that, if these guys cook the books and then dump their stock, essentially lie, steal, and cheat, then they absolutely should be held personally accountable. The other thing is that perhaps the lockdown may have been made for legitimate reasons, but I would submit that, to me anyway, it's awfully suspicious, the timing of it. The second point I wanted to make is this notion that it's going to hurt employees in the long run because companies are going to be very antsy about how they're going to go ahead and put together retirement plans. Well, I think that's a lot of hogwash, and I think that it is simply because let's not forget that this whole issue rests on the fact that these guys lied, cheated, and stole. And if the executives keep things on the up and up, then they should absolutely not be concerned about it personally. The other reason is that...
Okay, but Tom, what Jim Klein said specifically about Jim, you go ahead and make the argument. I'll make it for you.
No, I think the real concern here is that it's not just the people who may have engaged in those kinds of deceptive practices, but it's people and institutions who were sort of also innocent victims of this and or have no reason to be expected to know what was going on inside the company, that they should somehow be held accountable, is where there will be much broader negative social implications for the rest of the retirement system and the rest of America's retirement security, because you will find it hard to get people and institutions to serve in that capacity.
So it'll be more expensive.
Or they will charge a great deal more for those services, which will hurt everybody.
Right, and I think there needs to be some room in between for some reasonableness. Certainly innocent people should not be held accountable. The other point I wanted to make was that I have a hard time seeing how it's going to... It may have some impact, and I think some of that impact may be good. The pendulum does have to swing in the other direction. But the other thing is that, you know, let's keep in mind that these benefits are part of companies' incentives to get and retain good employees. And I think free market forces are, to some degree, going to keep that in place.
And that will have a determination on the type of plan that they offer. No, it's a good point. Let's see if we can get one more call in to Durham, North Carolina. Olivia's with us. Hi, Olivia.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit upset with the comment earlier by the gentleman who said that it was the employee's responsibility to determine whether to participate and how much. I read these statements all the time, and I try to be informed, and I can't honestly figure them out. They're complicated, and so I make best guess estimates. But I rely on the managers of these accounts to be ethical and honest and, to give me the correct information. But to say that it's the employee's full responsibility, I think, is really pompous. If you had a group of CPAs all contributing into a fund, yes, I would hold them responsible. But for the everyday person, I don't think that's appropriate.
Jim Klein,
I'm held responsible in my profession for providing a quality of business.
Olivia, thanks for your call. I want to hear from Jim and then to Lynn on this.
Well, by the way, I largely agree with the caller, and I want to make it real clear for those who weren't on, I wasn't the one who made that point.
No, that was the
first caller.
Yes, indeed. Sorry about that.
I do think that there is a responsibility, which I think everybody would agree that most employers take on in a very serious fashion. To try to convey this information in as clear a fashion as they're able to do under the guidelines that they're prescribed.
Okay, but is the line being redrawn here concerning who has responsibility for that money?
Well, it certainly could be in the aftermath of this decision with regard, once again, not to be a broken record, but with regard to the potential liability. You know, it's not that Northern Trust doesn't recognize that it has fiduciary responsibilities. It certainly does. The question is, should those fiduciary responsibilities, and I apologize for using the sort of term of art, extend to the kinds of information around which they really shouldn't have any don't have any knowledge. And I think that's sort of where the line has been stepped over here.
Then look ahead for us, though. Do you see the line over who has responsibility for a person's retirement fund being kind of shifted with this?
I think so, and I hope so. Other companies, HealthSouth, WorldCom, Dynegy, Williams Company, Tyco, there are too many scandals, and retirees have lost too much money. Something has to be fixed.
And does it have to be only when the company's caught breaking the law?
No, I think that the complaints that we hear from the industry, if Northern Trust Company and others are scared, good. If they do their job better, we will have fewer of these scandals.
And do you think that'll actually happen?
I think so. I think the caller who talked about market forces is absolutely correct. I think that this ruling was a wake-up call to the industry and to those responsible that they owe their primary duty to the retirees, not to the companies that hire them.
Lynn, thanks so much for being with us on the program.
Thank you.
Lynn Sarko, lead plaintiff's attorney in the Enron case, and Jim Klein, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Jim is president of the American Benefits Council. Earlier in the program, we talked with a couple of former Enron employees, Tom Padgett and Linda Roberts. The Connection is produced by Khalil Bird, Nancy Cohen, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Arik Karitsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Lindsay Miller, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugart. Our intern is Sarah Ligon. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.